Now we start our Old Testament survey. We've had our introduction to this course, and then we went over a little bit of Old Testament introduction. Grab something out of here. First book, obviously, is the book of Genesis. And it was written by Moses at approximately 1440 B.C., and the events covered from about 4000 B.C. to about 1800 B.C., okay, from the creation till Joseph. So written by Moses about 1440 B.C., events covered from about 4000 B.C. to 1800 B.C. Give you an outline of Genesis. You get a pretty good understand of the book just from this outline alone. And if you've been at the lectures on Genesis, the Bible studies on Genesis at my house, this will be just redundant for you, but the outline of Genesis. Genesis is the book of beginnings. That's what Genesis means, in the beginning. And so what you have, it's the beginning of the human race. That's Genesis 1 to 11. And then you have the beginning of the Hebrew nation, or the Jewish nation. And that's Genesis 12, 50. Now, okay, now there's four parts under each of these. Under the beginning of the human race, chapters 1 to 11 of Genesis, you have the creation, the fall, the flood, and the tower. Okay. And at the beginning of the Hebrew nation, you have Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph. If you get that down pat, and then just about a sentence overview of each one of these, you'll have a pretty good overview of the book of Genesis, okay? And so, Genesis is the book of beginnings. First is the beginning of the human race. God created man perfect. He created the universe and he created man perfect, but then man fell. Eventually man got so wicked that God had to flood the entire earth and just save Noah and his family. Then as mankind grew again, and grew in numbers again, they unified the rebellion against God, and God had to divide their languages, confuse their languages, to divide them into separate nations. Then Genesis 12:50, the beginning of the Hebrew nation, God decides to pick one man, Abraham, and from him raise one nation. From Abraham came Isaac, from Isaac came Jacob. Jacob had 12 sons that became the 12 tribes of Israel. And one of them was Joseph, and the last part of the book of Genesis focuses on Joseph. So let's take a look at some of the information here, some of the key passages in the book of Genesis. Open up your Bible. If you have a Bible, I might recommend that you bring a Bible that you highlight in. If you don't do it now, just jot the verses down. But it might save you time of taking notes where you can just highlight as needed in the Bible the verses that we cover.
What was the year on the authorship again?
1440. That's approximately time. Genesis 1:1, obviously we're talking about the creation period. Genesis 1:1 says, "In the beginning God created the heavens and the earth." By the way, the scriptures talk about three heavens. Paul says he went to the third heaven, the throne of God. The first heaven is the earth's atmosphere with the birds, the clouds. The second heaven is the outer space and the rest of the universe. The third heaven is the third throne room of God. Look at Genesis 1, 26 and 27. What's that? Yeah, the Mormons got their own doctrine there. Genesis 1, 26 and 27. Then God said, "Let us make man in our image, according to our likeness, and let them rule over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the sky, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." God created man in his own image, in the image of God who created him, male and female, he created them. And so here we have creation of man and woman, and they were created in God's image. Verse 31 of this chapter. And God saw all that he had made, and behold, it was very good, and there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day. And so God, everything that God created was good. It was a perfect creation. Genesis 2, verses 1 to 3 says that after God created the universe in 6 days, he rested on the seventh day. A little bit more information is given about man's creation in verse 7, that God formed him of the dust of the ground and breathed life into his nostrils. Yeah.
Why don't you just write down these passages? I mean,
no, you don't. Just the ones that you think that you might need. You're not going to see this on a test. Survey, you just got to get a good overview of the book.
Okay.
So if the verse sums up something to you and you want to list it down for your own edification, that's great. Pretty much, if you can just get a good listen to the lecture and get that outline down in your head, you'll have the book of Genesis right there. Book of Genesis is written in such a style, such an easy style to outline. But God formed man of the dust of the ground and breathed life into his nostrils. In verse 7. Then in verses 15 to 17, God tells man that he can put him in the Garden of Eden to cultivate it, told him he could eat from any tree of the garden that he wished, but that he should not eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and that if he ate it, he would surely die. Okay? The rest of the chapter there, God decides to create a mate for Adam, and he makes a deep sleep come over Adam and takes part of his side out, actually, and not just the rib, but some of the meat with it, and forms from it woman, and they become husband and wife. Verse 25 there says, "The man and his wife were both naked and were not ashamed." There's nothing to be ashamed of. There was no sin yet.
Did you think God made women from leftovers?
Whoa. And you said your wife wants a copy of this cassette?
I was just thinking, you know, everything was going good up until last night. We've had problems ever since.
Well, I don't know. I think Adam actually chose his wife rather than God. When she had fallen, he chose to join her in the fall rather than to stay with God. So, anyway, the fall of mankind is recorded in Genesis chapter 3, verses 1 to 7. The serpent, Satan speaks through the serpent and deceives Eve. And if you eat from this forbidden fruit, you won't die, but you'll become like God. We know that the serpent was Satan based on passages like Revelation 12:9, which refer to Satan as the serpent of old. So Satan possessed the serpent and led Eve astray. Because of their sinfulness, they knew they were naked. They were going to physically die, but right at that moment, they spiritually died. They were out of fellowship with God. They hid. God said, "Adam, where are you?" And then God cursed the ground. He cursed Satan, but he left them with a promise in Genesis 3:15. Remember, look for Jesus in the Bible, whether it's Old Testament or New. Genesis 3:15, "And I will put enmity, I will put hatred between you and the woman, between the serpent and the woman, between Satan and the woman, and between your seed and her seed, her offspring and your offspring. He shall bruise you on the head, and you shall bruise him on the heel. So apparently, one that's going to come was going to be born of the seed of the woman. It's the only kind of seed of the woman is mentioned. Seed literally means sperm. And throughout the seed, it doesn't literally mean sperm, but it's used of the man because the seed is from the sperm. And yet here, the seed of the woman is mentioned. You'll find the seed of Abraham, and we'll translate it as the offspring of Abraham. This is the only time I find the seed of the woman, so it implies, doesn't teach it directly, but it implies a virgin birth. That someone is going to be born, a male, he's referred to as he, or, well, no, no, actually it's not, I shouldn't say that, but yeah, I check up to you.
Him on him.
Yeah, okay. He shall bruise you on the head, to bruise the serpent on the head. So what you have is, there's going to be a male that's going to be born of a woman, and it's implied that it's without the agency of a man, who is going to crush the head of the serpent who was empowered by faith. And so in a long, and it was basically what it is, it was they, remember Adam's a lot smarter than us, he might have read more into it than we would have the first time we glanced over it, but at the first messianic prophecy, a prediction that God would someday send, there would be a man born of woman without the agency of man who would defeat Satan and his works. Also, what you find in Genesis 3, God, to cover the Adam and Eve, put fig leaves to cover themselves, but that would wither away. That wouldn't be a good covering. So what God did was he covered them with animal skin. Now, God ceased from his creation work, so he didn't create animal skin. What he did was he slaughtered innocent animals, probably right in their presence, and then covered them with animal skins. So right away, these people might have been thinking, our sin cost those animals their lives. Innocent blood must be shed to atone, to cover for sin. Abel seems to have picked that up. We're not told. Who knows? Maybe God brought it out real clear in a revelation. But in chapter 4 with Cain and Abel, Cain offered the fruit of the ground. Abel offered animal sacrifice, a bloody animal sacrifice. God accepted Abel's sacrifice, didn't accept Cain, and Cain ended up killing his brother. Genesis 4:8 tells us that. So the fall of mankind, and the first man born, the first one born, Cain, ends up being the murderer who murders his own brother. So you have the creation and then the fall. The ultimate climax of the fall is actually found in genealogy. In Genesis chapter 5, it starts talking about Adam. And in Genesis 5, verse 5, it says, so all the days that Adam lived were 930 years, and he died. And it talks about his son Seth, who replaced Abel, and he died. And then his son died, and his son died. Now there's a glimmer of hope in there, and that is because Enoch, according to verses 23 and 24 of Genesis chapter 5, Enoch walked with God. And so God took him. Enoch didn't die. God just took him to heaven. So we have creation and the fall. Then we see in Genesis 6, the God, at this point then, mankind got so wicked that God decided it was time to flood the earth. Yeah.
The question about the Nephilim, what are we calling?
Yeah.
Nephilim?
Yeah, I don't want to get too much into that, but I don't want to get too deep into that. My view is that the Nephilim or the Nephilim, men of renown, the sons of God, when the Jews took B'nai Elohim, which is the sons of God in Hebrew, and they translated it into the Greek for the Septuagint, the Jews translated that as Angelos, something, I think I read something like Angelos Tau Theou, which basically means the angels of God. All the other references of the sons of God in the Old Testament always refer to angels. And there's no good reason why it shouldn't refer to it there. In other words, all the legends of half gods and half men, those legends were probably developed from the fact that angels somehow took bodily form, cohabited with woman, and bore offspring. Jude talked about certain angels leaving their own domain, and now God has kept them in eternal bonds and stuff until the day of judgment. Well, then he says, this is the same way Sodom and Gomorrah went after strange flesh. Sodom and Gomorrah was homosexuals who tried to have sex with angels. And what do you call it? So it seemed that Jude verses 6 and 7 seemed to tie it in as well. And I don't want to get into it all with the UFO things and stuff like that, but I think there's real good evidence. I think there's a lot of real good evidence that UFO visitations are not just a thing of our century. There have been ancient paintings of UFOs, ancient mosaics. I just think that whenever you have, all angels means, angelos in the Greek is messenger. And I just think whenever you have messengers from out there coming here, you determine by their message whether they're a good angel or a bad angel or a fallen angel. But I don't think that there's any beings on other planets, but I think that there's a good chance that a lot of the UFO sightings are tied into that. We talk about that in a later time, but the Nephilim here, I really believe, I agree with Chuck Swindoll, I agree with H.L. Wilmington, I disagree with Walter Martin on this one, but I agree with, there's an awful lot of good, solid Bible scholars that agree that if the Hebrews say that their language, sons of God, means angels of God, then somehow angels cohabited with woman. And there, by the way, if you read the UFO abduction cases, there's an unhealthy preoccupation with human reproductive system. With the human reproductive system, they'll take samples of sperm and they'll explore private areas of males and females and things like that. So, by the way, the legion of demons that possessed the guy begged Jesus not to toss him into the abyss. So some demons, when they go too far, God chains them up in the abyss and they're no longer free to roam around like Satan is free to roam around right now. In Job, Satan said he roamed the earth freely. Well, when Jesus returns, he's going to have him chained up in the abyss for 1,000 years. But anyway, the Nephilim, by the way, that the Nephilim means fallen ones, literally. The fallen ones. And but I think that what happened then after that, the name Nephilim survived the flood, but I don't think any Nephilim survived the flood. And so in other words, the giants that started being born after the flood, they started calling them Nephilim. They carried on the name even though they weren't. In other words, because a guy is 8'2" doesn't mean he's demon possessed or anything. That's what I'm getting at. But the name Nephilim carried on, and then it was also the I've done extensive studies on the giants of the Bible, the Anakim, Rephidim or there's all throughout the scriptures. It's large. You can trace their histories and stuff like that, and show trace how Goliath goes back and through his ancestry, and not from generation to generation, but group of giants to group of giants. Find that line. Goliath probably wasn't the biggest giant in the Bible. I believe the biggest one recorded was probably Og of Bashan. Bed is recorded to be 13 and a half feet long. But Moses and the Israelites wiped him out. But anyway, man is growing his wickedness. I believe that, we don't have time to get into it, but I believe that somehow demons managed to cohabit with woman, take bodily form. We know good angels could take bodily form to do God's will. Apparently, demons can take, at times, take bodily form to do Satan's will. And I think if some genetic engineering might have been involved to bear offspring, but whatever the case, mankind got so violent and so wicked that God decided he was going to wipe out mankind, but he was going to save Noah, a man who, by the way, look at verse 8, but Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. Wasn't favor the same word as the word for grace? Noah found grace in the eyes of God's salvation is by grace through faith in the Old Testament as well as the New. We're going to find later on, Genesis 15, Abram believed the Lord and God credited it to him as righteousness. Genesis 15, 6. We're always saved by God's grace alone, through faith alone, in God's the promised one that God would send to atone for our sins. And that's, in other words, we've always been saved by God's grace alone, through faith alone, and Christ alone, even if they didn't know who the Christ was going to be exactly. By the way, keep in mind, the first 11 chapters of Genesis are overview. It's a big overview. Moses didn't list each and every individual factor. Anyway, so God decides he's going to flood the earth, and but that he was going to save Noah and Noah's family, a total of 8 people. Noah was to take 2 of each animal, but 7 of clean animals that could be used for animal sacrifices. And so then God floods the earth, and everybody's wiped out except Noah. Now God seems to institute human government in Genesis 9:6 after the flood. After the flood is over, and the flood covered the entire earth, all the mountains, the highest mountains were covered up to 15 cubits. And in Genesis 9:6, by the way, we spent a lot of time on this on our Friday night study. We went into the scientific aspects of that, what that means to geology, what that means to man. We don't have time for that kind of stuff now. Probably got 3 guys here, Kurt, John, and Doug, that can fill in, you know, people on some of that information if you can't get to me and stuff like that. But the studies that Dr. Henry Morris has done that have been just phenomenal. And you have to assume there was no worldwide flood to make a case for an old earth. But the fact is, they've never disproven a worldwide flood. You've got fossilization worldwide, and rapid burial for fossilization, and so therefore you've pretty much got evidence of worldwide flood. Now, whether it was just 1,000 different huge floods or 1 worldwide flood, I guess you could argue about that a little bit, but I think the evidence is pretty strong for a worldwide flood. And which would mean that a lot of the dating methods that evolutionists use go right down the tubes. So we don't have time for that. But Genesis 9:6, God tells Noah, you can start eating animals now. Before that, they were only eating vegetables, vegetation and all. God says, whoever sheds man's blood, by man's blood shall be shed, for in the image of God he made man. In other words, he's saying, man was created in my image, man is not an animal. Therefore, don't go around killing men. If somebody kills men, I'm going to give my authority to other men to put them to death. It's an instituting of human government is what's being done here. Looking down a little further, God gives his covenant to Noah in verses 11 to 13, the rainbow, showing that he would not have a worldwide flood again to destroy all life on earth. The Tower of Babel, after the flood, mankind just gathered together in one area, and they wanted to make a big name for themselves, and they decided to build a tower to glorify themselves. There's even the possibility that the tower might have been a study of the stars and the false worship that entailed. But whatever the case, they united, they spoke one language, and God had told them, commanded them to be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. They weren't doing it. So what God then did was, he confused their languages, and so by confusing their languages, they couldn't relate to one another, so they ended up splitting up into their different family groups. Apparently he did it in such a way that this family spoke the same language, and that family spoke the same language, and that family spoke the same language. In Genesis 10, it breaks them down by family groups. Okay? So God divided man, separated him, and so now God is through with dealing with mankind, the human race as a whole. So now it comes to the beginning of the Hebrew nation. He picks one man, Abraham, and from him he entrusts them with his word eventually down the line. There's good evidence that Moses used books written before him that probably were passed on from Adam to Seth to Lamech, the father of Noah, to Seth, and then eventually to Terah or to Abraham, and then right on down the line to Joseph, and eventually into the hands of Moses. And Moses used these to get the genealogies and the overview for those book of Genesis. But whatever the case, the beginning of the Hebrew nation, now God begins to pick one nation. And by the way, through the prophet Christ, we go right back to the whole human race again, where you don't have to worship the God of Israel to be saved, as far as become a Jew, to have the true worship, but now salvation is offered to all men through Jesus Christ. And so first there is Abraham. God calls Abraham, Genesis chapter 12. He says here in the call of Abraham, he says, "Now the Lord said to Abram," Abram meant the exalted father, later his name was changed to Abraham, which means the father of multitudes. "And the Lord said to Abram, go forth from your country and from your relatives and from your father's house to the land which I will show you, and I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great, and so you shall be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you I will curse, and you all the families of the earth shall be blessed." And I just jotted down here that a little bit of artwork, no laughing at the artwork, yeah. But the Abrahamic covenant there, God told him, go to the land that I show you. It turned out later on to be the land of Canaan. But he said, I will make thee a great nation. First promise. That, of course, was the nation of Israel. At this time, Abraham had no children. He was getting old. His wife, he was 75. His wife was 65. She was barren, unable to bear children. But God says, I will make thee a great nation. So he made him that promise. He said, I'll bless thee. He blessed him with material wealth and tremendous prosperity, but he also blessed him spiritually and protected him through some crazy situations. But Abraham had tremendous wealth, enough wealth so that when four or five nations took Lot captive, he just took his servants and defeated them in battle and brought Lot back alive. And that's more wealth than I know of anybody having today. He told him, I would make thy name great. The Islamic faith, the Jewish faith, and the Christian faith, he's still one of the big names today. And then we're talking like 4,000 years since he's been on the earth, and he still has a big name. God said that he should be, that he would make Abram a blessing. And obviously, from Abram, there has been tremendous blessing throughout the world because of the Messiah coming through Abraham. So I will bless them that bless thee, and I will curse them that curse thee. It was that way for Abraham, and it appears to be that way for his descendants, the nation of Israel. People like Adolf Hitler messed with the nation of Israel. People like Adolf Hitler end up getting the short end of the stick. And then he said, in thee all the families on the earth will be blessed, just as Abraham was blessed both materially and spiritually, so too shall all the families of the earth be blessed materially and spiritually, because spiritually all Jesus Christ has turned to me. In fact, God said in the Old Testament, turn to me and be saved till the end of the earth. For I am God and there is no other. The Messiah came from Abraham's line. And so salvation comes to all men, but also when Jesus returns and reigns on earth for 1,000 years, the nations will be blessed to live in a perfect environment with the perfect king, and will have that peace that man so desperately longs for. When man tries to achieve peace on his own, it just doesn't happen. Only through Jesus Christ will we receive the peace that we long for.
Was that a drawing of Abraham, or was that a typo of Abraham?
That was actually Abraham. It goes back a long time ago to a vision I had. For those who don't know me on the cassette, that was just a joke that didn't go over too well. Okay, Take a look at Genesis 16, 1 and 2. Now Sarai, her name was later changed to Sarah, Abraham's wife had borne him no children, and she had an Egyptian maid whose name was Hagar. So Sarai said to Abram, "Now behold, the Lord has prevented me from bearing children. Please go into my maid. Perhaps I shall obtain children through her." And Abram listened to the voice of Sarai. Lack of faith there. God promised he would give Abram, raise up a nation, give him a son and raise up a nation from his wife, Sarai. And she told Abram, she said, "Abram, it's just not going to happen. Let's help God." And when you think you can help God, God's not ready to use you. Or you're not ready to be used by God is what it is. And she gave birth to a son, Ishmael, and later on from him, a good portion of the Arabs came from him. And Abram's descendants have been suffering from this ever since. But the fact is that they were rushing things, and God had to tell them, "Abram, your son is not, the chosen nation is not going to come from Ishmael. Sarai will bear a child." Get to it. It was Genesis 15:6 where it said that Abram believed the Lord and he credited to him as righteousness. Abram just couldn't believe that God, you know, look at verse 2. Genesis 15, I actually went ahead by mistake, but then Abram said, "O Lord God, what wilt thou give me, since I am childless, and the heir of my house is Eliezer of Damascus?" He had a servant. He said, let this guy be my heir. Raise up a nation from my servant. He's a great guy. Raise it up with him. Don't tell me you're going to bear children from my barren wife, Sarai. It just can't happen. It's impossible. So what God does in Genesis chapter 15, 5 and 6, "And he took him outside and said, Now look toward the heavens and count the stars if you are able to count them. And he said to him, So shall your descendants be. Then Abram believed in the Lord, and he reckoned it to him as righteousness." Now, that chart that I drew, that's why I had Abraham looking up at the stars, okay? That's why I had him looking up at the stars. Abraham, he couldn't see. He said, "Look, we got a problem here, Lord. We got a problem. My wife can't have children. She's getting old. Just let my servant make a nation out of him." God said, "Abram, come on outside. Look up at those stars. See if you can count those stars, because your descendants are going to be that many." Now, it doesn't say it, but I get the impression that as Abram is trying to count those stars, all of a sudden it clicked. That the one who's promising to raise a child from his wife's barren womb is the same one who created the universe. It's the same one who created all those stars. And I think old Abram got to thinking, if God can create this universe, he can bring a mighty nation from a barren woman's womb. And Abram believed God, and God credited to him as righteousness. Then in Genesis 19, there, verse 24, it says, "Then the Lord rained on Sodom and Gomorrah brimstone and fire from the Lord out of heaven." There, Sodom and Gomorrah has been tremendously sexually immoral. We get our word sodomy, this homosexual act, comes from the word Sodom. Homosexuality was rampant there. A whole big gang of homosexuals came to Lot's door and wanted to have sex with the two visitors that had visited Lot. Well, they turned out to be angels, and so the angels sent them away blind. But Sodom and Gomorrah, God poured his judgment upon them. As Billy Graham has said, if God doesn't judge America, he owes Sodom and Gomorrah an apology. And America has gotten real sexually immoral. It's to the point, it is so bad to the point right now If I have, as a Christian who has a church which has a non-profit status, if I got politicians who agreed with me and I had them speak in my church, that's against the law unless I also offer the same opportunity to politicians who disagree with me, the people they're running against. However, if you're a homosexual and you have a homosexual group with a non-profit status, you're allowed to only bring in candidates that agree with you. You won't lose your nonprofit status and proclaim your views. In other words, at this point, there are some areas where homosexuals have more rights than Christians do, and I think we need to really watch out. There's a comeback of hepatitis B and tuberculosis right now. Some strains of tuberculosis that have no known cure for them, and we thought we were through with that. But as long as we condone sinful lifestyles, the diseases are going to continue to spread. But Genesis chapter 21, the first few verses there is the birth of Isaac. Finally, Sarai, now Sarah, gives birth to Isaac, the promised child. From him the chosen nation will come. In Genesis 22, God commands Abraham to sacrifice his son. Abraham is thinking, wait a minute here, if I put him to death, there's not going to be any holy nation. And God's chosen nation can't come from him. But Abraham was obedient to the Lord, even in areas where he didn't understand God. He was willing to sacrifice him right when he got ready to sacrifice him. Now, Hebrews says that he knew God had the power to raise the dead. That even if he killed his son, God was testing him, God would raise his son from the dead. Right when he got about, he held up the knife. The angel of the Lord was probably a pre-incarnate visitation, Old Testament visitation of Christ before he became a man, provided for him a sacrifice, a ram that was in the bushes. And they sacrificed the ram in his place. But it was a test to see if Abraham was obedient, and he was. Now, Isaac gives born to two sons, Jacob and Esau. And Esau was the firstborn, but his focus was mainly on the material things, and the blessing ended up passing down from Jacob, who wasn't exactly the greatest guy in the world himself. But let me see if I can find the Jacob in chapter 27, his father, Isaac, loved Esau. Esau was a man's man. He was a hairy guy. He was a hunter. And Jacob used to hang out in the tents with his mother. And he'd probably get a little bit of housework or whatever. And Isaac said, man, that Esau, he's got the birthright. I'm going to pass it down to him. And I'm going to give him the blessing. Well, Esau was hungry one day, and he gets back from hunting. And he ends up selling his birthright for a bowl of soup. I mean, that's how spiritually minded this guy was. And then, when he goes out to hunt to get his father's favorite meal, kill an animal, cook his father's favorite meal, the mother of Jacob says, now's your chance, and she puts animal skins on his hands, on his arms, to make it look like he was hairy. And then he went in and pretended at this point Isaac's eyes were failing, and he ends up getting the blessing from his father Isaac rather than Esau. And but God, apparently Jacob, who was such a deceiver, and there's even some later occurrences which just shocked me, but that was God's chosen man to continue the line, because from Jacob came 12 sons. And from these 12 sons came the 12 tribes of Israel. Now the son Judah that came from, let me mention the 12 sons' names were Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, Zebulun, Gad, Asher, Dan, Naphtali, Joseph, and Benjamin. Now Joseph had two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh. And usually, whenever there was distribution of land, Levi wasn't included because they were priests that had to be in all the different tribes. And so Joseph got a double blessing. One tribe became Ephraim and another tribe became Manasseh. But the God, the Messiah's line came from Judah. Jesus is the lion from the tribe of Judah. At the same time, Joseph gets most of the attention in chapters 37 straight through chapter 50. What occurred there was that Joseph was the favorite son of Jacob. Jacob gave him a coat of many colors, and he wouldn't give him any hard tasks to do, and all his brothers were working hard. And Joseph would go out there and tell him about a dream he had of his father, his mother, and his brothers bowing down before him and things like that. And they'd get ticked off. Finally say, look, I've had enough of this guy, let's kill him. So they decided they're going to kill their brother. Now Reuben's the oldest brother, and he's thinking, man, if Dad finds out about this, he's gonna whoop the tar out of me. So Reuben figures, I'll convince them. They beat him up and stuff like that. I'll convince them not to kill him. So they convince him to beat up Joseph. They throw him into a pit, actually a broken cistern. They throw him into the pit, and he talks his brothers into, rather than killing him, to sell him into slavery to the Egyptian travelers. So they sell him into slavery. Now he's in Egypt. They go back. They pour animal blood on the coat, and they tell the father, rip the coat, and tell the father he's eaten by wild animals. Anyway, Joseph, a lot of strange things occur when he's in Egypt, but for the most part, he eventually overcomes. He's falsely accused of rape. He goes to prison, but he's able to interpret dreams, and eventually he gets released from prison because he's able to interpret the Pharaoh's dream about 7 good years of prosperity, but then 7 years of famine. He says, we need to prepare during the 7 years of prosperity for the 7 years of famine. Pharaoh says, fine, I'm putting you in charge. He puts Joseph in charge. Eventually, Joseph's brothers have to travel into Egypt. They don't recognize him. They travel to Egypt to get some food because of the famine. Joseph messes with their minds and tells them, you got to come back with Benjamin. So they come back with Benjamin, who's the younger brother of Joseph. Now, Joseph and Benjamin were born to Jacob from his wife Rachel, who was his favorite wife. So that's why Joseph and Benjamin were his favorite sons. And so now Benjamin has become Jacob's favorite son, and now he commands them to bring Benjamin, keeps him hostage. Make a long story short, eventually Jacob is brought with the brothers of Joseph, 11 brothers of Joseph. They come into Egypt. Joseph reveals himself. They take good care of them. And so they end up living in Egypt during the famine. They've got plenty of food there because of Joseph and his preparation. And so now they're living in Egypt. But then when we pick up in the book of Exodus, they reach a time when a Pharaoh comes to power who knew not Joseph. And he begins to fear the Israelites. They're so numerous. And so what he then does is he puts them into slavery. And then they look for redemption. And they find it. And a man raised up by God named Moses. And we'll pick that up when we get into the next lecture on Exodus. As far as the focus on the Messiah, in the book of Genesis, Genesis 3:15, he's the seed of the woman who will crush the serpent's head. And Genesis 12:3, all the nations on earth will be blessed through Israel because of the Messiah and his reign. And in Genesis 49:10, there's a prediction that the Messiah will come after the Jews have lost their power and the Gentiles rule over them. And we don't have time to get into that, but we'll pick it up next week with the book of Exodus.